We're going to shift gears a little bit, and we talked about the decision tree, and we looked at the cash and the basis and the futures of the market. And I think what we want to try to do is start to kind of put some parameters around the market so you can start to try to evaluate where there risk management, where it makes sense to do some risk management. And part of that is just trying to understand where we've been from a historical standpoint. And that's, obviously been a very volatile year this last year, obviously for the better. But we just would like to be able to sit back and look at it from a big picture standpoint. As you can see here, when you go back, and this is since 1991, really you can see that the range is pretty much from 58 on the bottom side up towards about 82, give or take, on the top side. And that was the range we were in for all the 90s and the early part of this decade. Now, obviously, in 2003, we had some sort of a breakout, and we felt pretty confident as we looked long-term that we were going to be able to maintain a higher trading range. I still think that on average we feel that way when we look at the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, but maybe for the next 12 months or so, it might be a little bit of a more of a struggle as we try to work through some of the situation with the loss of the export market. But I want to look at two things here. First of all, just looking at this chart, and again, this is just the daily Fed market. This is just looking at what the Kansas cash trade is, and that's what we use internally. All the stuff that you'll look at is just looking at the Kansas cash market. But as you can see, when we were going through here, and you've seen the markets, and you were talking about trying to incorporate into your risk management plan, and you've seen the markets that were trading, let's say the futures markets were trading in the low 60s, historically, did it make much sense to be hedging when the market was in the low 60s? Knowing that when you think about it, what's the risk from a long-term perspective? There was very little risk from a long-term perspective of the market below the low 60s, below 62, 61 bucks. So what you did is you were building yourself a parameter. When the market got that cheap, you probably at that point want to be less aggressive with your risk management plan. Now, up until 2003, when the market got on top of 80 bucks, 82 bucks, how aggressive did you want to be at that point in terms of managing your risk? Very aggressive. Because what was the odds of the market being stronger? Not very good odds. So now we take that, what we know, from basically 91 through 2002, and we applied that to this last year. Why did we have so many people there through the first half of the year be willing to sell the futures market in the upper 70s? Because from a perspective, when we looked at the last 10, 15 years, we didn't spend all that much time above there. So you were willing to take that price, plus you're meeting your profit objective. You're able to meet your profit objective, which, in a lot of cases, was way above our objectives. It was nearly $100 a head or better. So you're willing to take that type of money. Now, when we start thinking about the future here, we still need to be able to build in some parameters, okay? This cash chart can kind of help you start to try to build those parameters. And actually, I'll go to the next one because I think we'll go back and forth with them a couple of times. But you can see, like Dwayne pointed out, we had the market run up way up to almost a buck, 114 there in the middle of October. Obviously, the market was trending lower as we came into late December. And then, the last couple of weeks of the year and the first couple of this year, the last week of the year and the first couple of weeks this year, we had the risk back down here at about $73 to $74. Since then, we had the bounce back. But when you go back and you look at this, especially when the reason we take 1999 on is this time frame is when we started to see the demand shift in the business. Basically, in the middle of 1999 is when you started to see the better demand. You start to see the retailers slowly but surely at that point were able to start getting a little bit more for retail prices. And that, if we had a graph, you'd just see that's slowly moving higher all the way through this time frame. We were able to produce more product and still be able to have the same prices as we did back in the 90s. That's a sign of better demand. So we take all that in perspective and we start to put some parameters around, okay, well, now where is the market going to find support and resistance in this instance? And, and no one knows for sure, obviously, with the volatility that we've had in terms of the BSC situation, but you can start to see that if we feel like that we're going to have this demand stay with us, the domestic demand shift that we've had, and we're going to be able to see the export markets open up at some point in time, It appears sometime, somewhere down in here, in the 70 to 74 range, is probably going to be some pretty good resistance. Because typically what the markets will do is, well, that's where we kind of broke out of that range, if you will, when we went upward. So that should be pretty good support for us if we make those two key assumptions that I mentioned, maintaining the domestic demand that we've had, and at some point in time we see the export markets open back up. Now, will they open up this year? I mean, you know, no one knows for certain. But somewhere in here in the next couple of years, if we don't have an onslaught of BSE cases, we know that we're going to see the export markets open back up. They can't go without our beef. Like Dwayne said, we're the only grain-fed choice beef out there through the fall time frame, you know, except for a very, very small amount like in Australia. So we will see those markets open back up. We're not sure how quickly. But so when you're trying to put together, and part of what we're teaching you today, obviously a lot of you are going to try to apply it in today's market, but you also want to take this back with you as you start to build your plan and apply it to your operations for the long haul. So what it does, it gives us some perspective that we're going to probably find some good support in the markets in the 70 to 74 range. Doesn't mean that you don't have risk below there, but the risk appears minimal below those levels as we start to look at the markets. Once we get things back online. Now, this year it's a little bit different story because we don't know when the export markets are going to open back up. But that's where you can start to try to build these parameters in the market. If at least in my opinion, at some point in time, we see the futures market or the cash market back up there on top of the dollar, does that make sense that that's probably fairly close to the top end of the range? So at that point, you probably want to be more aggressive in terms of trying to do some business. And as we look at the next 2 or 3 years, you know, especially as we get past this year, especially in the fourth quarter of this year and then the next 2 years after that, we feel like we're going to have tighter production, tighter supplies. So declining production with maintained demand and an export market's back open, we feel pretty confident that we should be able to see support on the 70, around 70 bucks. And then that resistance, you know, maybe it's around a dollar. We're really not sure because we just started that new trading range. But I think, you know, you can say that when you get up there towards the dollar, you can be fairly aggressive in terms of trying to manage your risk. That's what these charts allow us to do. Let me just back up to this one real quick. Again, you can see when you start to kind of look across here, We don't spend a lot of time. We spent some time above 70 in the early 90s, not very much as you went through the mid-90s. And what you've done is you've kind of started to slowly change the trend. You've had a little bit of a breakout. And in this area right in here, you can see there's pretty good support all the way through here in that low 70s. And this is obviously looking at over the course of the last 10 to 12 years. So I think that's where you can initially start to try to incorporate some of this information into your risk management plan. Build the market some parameters. And in my instance, for my plan, parameters are around 70 on the bottom side and up to a dollar on the top side. Incorporate the seasonality in the market that Dwayne talked about. Incorporate the seasonality of the industry economic stuff in terms of saying, hey, maybe I want to place less cattle if I'm an investor feeder towards the summer and more towards the first quarter. Those are all things in terms of, as you start to put together your risk management plan, and you don't even have to use the futures and options. Again, if we look at the cash, let me just go back up to it real quick. If on average, you're able to buy break-evens close to 70 cents, on average, you're going to probably take that if we're in a new parameter or new range. Yeah. Now, if you're having to be buying break-evens over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, and you're having to be buying a lot of break-evens in the mid to upper 90s, probably want to be a little bit more cautious and probably more aggressive with your risk management plan. Again, that's how you start to try to incorporate and build your risk management plan. So that's part of the decision tree. Number one in the decision tree was the cash market. You're trying to analyze the fundamentals. You guys probably aren't going to be able to do that on a daily basis. You can talk with us at Cattle Facts to help you understand what the fundamentals are. But partly understanding and giving yourself some parameters in the market will help you understand how to incorporate all this into your decision making on the decision tree for the cash trend. Basis, which is number two on the decision tree. Well, what is basis? It's just simply the difference between the cash market and a futures contract. We like to consider basis as being a price. It has movement, which we're all very well aware of, and it can be volatile, and there's risk associated with it. Like I said, you can take basis. If you live in Iowa, you can have basis for your specific cash market. If you're in Kansas, Nebraska, whatever. All the stuff, the material we're going to be looking at is going to be looking at the basis for basically Southwest Kansas. Now, we look at basis, like I mentioned earlier, a little bit differently than probably most of you start looking at basis. The average cattle feeder thinks of basis as he goes and he buys cattle, he puts the cattle on feed, and then he goes to the heads of the board and he has to try to figure what the basis is to know what his price is going to be when he sells the cattle. And he doesn't worry about what anything else is with basis. Just when he gets ready to ship those cattle, he wants that basis to be pretty close to what he estimated. And you have to understand that. You have to be able to recognize that and be able to do a good job of forecasting what that basis is going to be. We look at basis on every single contract, every single day. We're looking at basis for June and August live cattle right today. And what that basis means to us right now. And like Dwayne mentioned earlier, you've got the June live cattle at 70 and the August live cattle at 72. Well, that basis is, basically we've got a $10 to $15 discount built into the market already from where the cash is last week, this week average, to what the market's telling us for the summer. What was the normal break from highs to lows that Dwayne talked about in the seasonality? $13. That's average. Obviously, you have some bigger than that and some smaller than that. Right now, today, the market's already forecasting the average break in the market. So from a basis standpoint, as we think about it, and the way that we measure it, with that type of a discount already forecasting an average break in the market, we're not excited to run out there and sell June live cattle at $70 or August at $72 because it's already got it built in. Now, at some point in time between now and let's say the 15th of April, if things start to evolve and the fundamentals are becoming more negative, still no talk of any of the borders opening up and it's looking pretty tough, then at that point in time, you know what? Yeah, maybe we want to look to sell the board at that point. Which, well, I'll go to it in just a second. But at that point in time, you still would probably have a futures market that's somewhere right around the level it is now. Because we know that cash and basis, during the period of that contract, have to come together at some point in time. So that's how we look at basis. Another way that we try to incorporate basis is when we start talking about the three cardinal rules and how important basis is on the three cardinal rules. The three cardinal rules are pretty simple. They're, number one, are the cattle that you're selling out of the feedlot currently making or losing money? Number two, will the cattle that are being purchased and placed on feed break even at or below the price of the fed cattle that you're currently selling? We like to call that the swap. And all that means is today we're selling fed cattle at $84 or $5. And you're buying a break even for, if you're buying cattle now for the 4th of July time frame, you're buying a break even at $81 or $2, we'll call it. That's a positive swap because the one you're selling is higher than the one that you're buying back. Even though it's a way off compared to what the summer futures are saying, it's still a positive swap when you're looking at the market. There's a seasonality to swap, which is important. Typically in the summer time frame, on average you're probably going to be buying a little bit of a negative swap. It's just, and we have all that data if you ever want to look at it. It's just when the swap gets way out of line one way or the other. But right now, we've got a positive swap. And then is the relationship between the cash and the futures normal, or is the futures a larger premium to the cash market than the average would suggest? Well, that's just the opposite, for example, in this instance. we've got a situation where we've got a larger than normal discount to the summer futures. When you think about these three cardinal rules, think about since basically a year ago, all three of these cardinal rules have all been positive. We've been making money all the way through 2003, been basically buying a positive swap all the way through. And since February, we had a very, very large discount in the futures market. All three cardinal rules were positive, which was what? Very, very supportive to the market. One of the reasons why, like Dwayne said, we were pulling cattle ahead of schedule, we were killing more cattle, profitability was exceptional, and the market just kept continuing to feed on itself. Well, in today's environment, number one, are we selling the cattle out of the feedlot at a profit or loss? It's kind of hard to measure. 2 weeks ago, we were selling at a loss, and we were at $74, or 3 weeks ago, we were at $74. When we sold them at 87 last week, or 85 to 7, we were making a little bit of money. So it's a little bit hard to measure, but I'd say on average, the guys are kind of breaking even when you look across the board for the first 3 weeks of January. Are we buying a pretty decent swap? Well, again, that's a little bit hard. When you're selling at $74 and buying an $80 swap 3 weeks ago, that was a horrible swap. Now you're buying a decent swap. So this one's kind of, again, it's not a bad swap, but we could certainly do a lot better. Now, do you have a large premium in the board? No, you actually have a very large discount. My point here is that we're starting to see these three cardinal rules shift to the negative a little bit. At least two of the three are starting to shift slowly. And that needs to send up a little bit of a red flag to all of us as we start to try to manage our risk. What typically happens when you have all three cardinal rules working against you? Large front end number. Because why? You're losing money, there's a premium board, and you can't buy a feeder back. So what are you going to do as a cattle feeder? Hold them. You'll hold cattle. That's just our mentality. So you slowly build that front-end number, that front-end supply, which what does what? Increases fed cattle weights. Obviously, increased days on feed. You get into some major feeding losses, and you have large carryover problems. When all three rules are negative or going against you, this is exactly what happens. And these years, 74, 85, 91, 94, 98, and you'll want to use the second half of 2001 and basically the first half to first 9 months of 2002, but first half of 2002, second half of 01, first half of 02, all three of these rules were negative. And I failed to mention it when we were in the industry economics section, but you can go back and look at that section, and in those years, 85, 91, 94, 98, and 01, 02, you can see where that's where all the big losses occurred in the feeding business. So again, as you start to try to put together your plan of what your objective is it to try to make money? Of course it's trying to make money. But a lot of instances in a break-even business, which feeding cattle is, it's to try to minimize losses. And partly, you want to take advantage of knowing these three cardinal rules and seeing the situation to try to minimize these losses. For example, today, like we talked about, we're kind of breaking even on the cattle. We've got a decent swap. It's favorable that we have a very large discount in the market. But the unknown out there is the export situation, which creates a larger uncertainty in the marketplace. So, as an investor cattle feeder, knowing that most years on average from 1980 to 2002, you lose money feeding cattle that are placed in the summer, what do you want to do as an investor cattle feeder? Do you want to buy cattle and put them on feed right now? Probably not. Because the risk is there that you will probably lose some money, knowing that everything that we went over today. Seasonality to the Fed market. Seasonality of the profitability and losses. And then knowing that these three cardinal rules, at least two of them, are kind of slowly working against us. They're not against us all the way right now, but they're slowly working against us. And then the unknown fact, which is the export market situation. So So when we talk about the basis situation, and we've got a few of these graphs up here that we look at in terms of basis. And you can see what's taking place in here. And this is looking at February Live Cattle 2004. And really, the entire contract up in here until late December, we had a very, very strong basis. And all we do here is we have the zero line where cash and futures are equal. Anything above that is when cash is above futures. And anything below that is when cash is below futures. But think about, especially in the second half of the year, how the markets worked. We have this enormously large discount into the futures, and this would be applied for October, December, and February all the way through. And we were very aggressive in selling cattle because the market was telling us that the market was going to be going lower at some point in time. And up until, when you think about it, up until basically December 23rd, what did the futures market do during that whole time frame? You go back from the middle of October, essentially, to, you know, if we went back up in here towards the middle of December, we had a plus $25 basis that went to about a plus $8 or $9 basis. All the risk was in the cash market. Basically, the cash broke from, you know, $1.10 to $15 to, we'll just call it $90. Had about a $25 break in the cash. How much do we have a break in the futures? It's like $3 or $4. About four bucks. All the risk, when you have this type of a structure in the market like we do today with these big discounts, the bulk of the risk is in the cash market. That doesn't mean you don't manage your risk, but you have to recognize the fact that the bulk of the risk is in the cash market. And that's the situation that we're in today. Now, if we would happen to have a situation where we would have had, let's say, cash below futures in the middle of October, and you had February live cattle out there that was sitting there at $1.20 for some crazy reason, you know, we would have been wanting to sell that thing all day long because of the premium structure. But it didn't work out that way. So this is how you try to incorporate the basis, and we've got all these graphs in here that you can look at. Here's another one. Here's June live cattle. You go back and you look at June in here, and basically the middle of October, you had the cash was at about $1.15, and you know basically June live cattle were sitting in here at about $0.80. They were right at about 75 cents, if you will, give 75 to 6 cents. Since that time frame, we've had cash go from $1.15 to, let's just call it 80 cents. And where's the June live cattle gone? Yeah, you know what? It went from the mid-70s to about 66 for its absolute lows, but it came right back off that level, and it's been there in the low 70s for most of January. So again, all the risk was in the cash market. Now, when we look at the basis situation, we start making and we look at our decision tree, because of the very, very large discounts in the futures market, we were not wanting to be short the cattle or hedged on your cattle on a third of it because of the basis. Now, that's not to say that you maybe didn't have some puts that you're buying for disaster insurance or for some downside risk in the market. But just strictly looking at the basis situation, a third of the cattle wouldn't have been on a short position. Because, again, all the risk was to the cash market. And that's what broke the most. Broke, you know, $30 versus the futures only broken $5. So that's how you try to incorporate your, when you look at the decision tree, that's how we're trying to utilize basis. Now, it's not a guarantee. But on average, if you're in a situation and you've got the three, well, I'll say it's 95% guarantee. If you've got the three cardinal rules that are being violated, and you've got a premium structure where you've got a negative basis, meaning that futures is above cash, you're going to want to be very aggressive with your risk management, either for sure hedging or for sure buying puts. Because in all those instances, the market will come back and haunt you. As a cattle feeder. Now, how does that relate back to the guys that have stocker cattle or calves? Well, If when you start to recognize what's going on with the feeding sector, typically when the cattle feeders lose money for about 2 to 2.5 turns, that's when they start to try to buy feeder cattle back a little bit cheaper. So we've been making money for 12 to 15 months feeding cattle. You know, as Dwayne kind of pointed out, right now, when you have cattle for sale, looking at everything we're looking at, it says you probably should go ahead and just sell the cattle and not worry about feeding them. Now, maybe when we get to next fall, and they're starting to buy feeder cattle, they're working against the back end of the board because we've lost money, if we assume we lose money for 2, 2.5 turns, then maybe you start to say, you know what, I think, you know, the structure is kind of set, that maybe I'll go ahead, you know, the swamp's pretty decent. You know, yeah, we've lost some money, but the market looks like it's starting to come back a little bit. You can start to kind of feed the, or go ahead and retain ownership on those cattle. But it's just the passing back system as it relates from the feedlot guys, the stocker guys, to the cow-calf guys. But it always starts with the feedlot guys. So if you're in the stocker business or the cow-calf business, you always want to be knowing what's going on with the segment above you in terms of their P&L. And that's something that we touch base on, you know, once a month, once every couple of months in terms of our cattle facts updates, try to help you out with that. I'm going to skip these and I'll come back to them. But let's look at some of the seasonality in terms of the futures market. So we looked at our decision tree. We obviously looked at the fundamentals of the market, which is number one on the decision tree for the cash trend. We've talked about the basis. Number three is the seasonality of, is the futures trend. Just looking at the 20-year average, and this doesn't run calendar year, it runs contract year. So this is basically June 1, and that's the end of June. This is looking at the June live cattle futures. But the last 20 years, usually sometime there in early March is where you see the highs of the June live cattle futures. So as you start to try to put together your risk management plan, and you're trying to incorporate, okay, based on the decision tree, I need a third of my decision based on what the future seasonality is and what the futures market's telling us. You know, we've talked to a lot of people who have said, you know what, we've already got this enormous discount built into the market in terms of June. You know, we're not really sure exactly what's going to happen with the export situation, but we feel pretty confident that from $70, knowing what the seasonality of June live cattle is that the market will kind of hold, at least hold these levels, if not get a little bit stronger as we go in towards late February, early March. So our take has been, let's just be a little bit patient about selling June live cattle futures or hedging your cattle for that time frame based on the 30-year decision because of what the seasonality suggests. It suggests that the market over time is either steady or higher when you look at the 20-year average. So that's how you start to try to incorporate what number three is on the decision tree. Just trying to include the seasonalities of the markets. You know, another good example is looking at, April live cattle is one that always does the same thing. You know, many guys that are calf feeders, for example, when they put the calves on feed, they'll buy some puts on the bottom side just to protect their downside risk. And then as the market, they'll just follow the market. They don't want to be hedged going into the winter time frame because of weather risk. And once we get past where the weather risk is, a lot of times after January going into February, then they start to do some hedging for their marketings on the April and June live cattle. And it's just taking the seasonality and letting the seasonality work for you 7 or 8 times out of every 10 years. Feeding cattle, if you will, is a lot like gambling. You got to try to beat the odds. And if you can beat the odds, you're going to be able to make some money. But if you're going and you're going to Vegas and you're always playing the roulette wheel, which is the worst odds in the house, you're probably not going to make very much money. Versus if you're playing, craps where you have more odds and you can spread your money out. So you got to think of it the same way. You're just trying to beat the odds and let the odds work for you. October live cattle. This is one, and we've seen when we look at the profitability stuff that we typically are profitable in the fourth quarter when you look at over the last 20 years. Here's one, though, where you just basically let the market, most cases you don't ever really want to be hedged looking at the seasonality of October live cattle futures for that fourth quarter time frame. Now, there are going to be some cases if we've got a premium board structure, if we've got a very large carryover coming into the late part of the third quarter, if we're losing money, those types of things would maybe want to make you suggest to do something different. But if you've got a discount board structure, you want to let the seasonality play itself out, and that's typically over the long haul going to be higher from the summer going into the fourth quarter. Now, just to kind of jump back here, part of what you want to do from a cattle feeder standpoint, we'll also talk about it from a stocker operation, I'm going to look at the August feeder cattle, is as a cattle feeder, if you're working in the spot market, it's awful hard to make money. Because, again, it's a break-even business over time. But what I mean by that is if you sell cattle today and you buy cattle tomorrow, that's where it's basically a break-even business over the long haul. So what you got to try to do is you got to be thinking about how do I buy the next round of inventory in advance? Whether it's on the board, whether you're buying calves and you're backgrounding calves, whatever the case might be, you always have to be thinking about your next round of inventory. And the seasonality of August feeder cattle futures can help you do that. You know, basically you have lows sometime here in May, usually about the second week of May, give or take. And this seasonality is actually 9 out of 10 years. The market moves higher as you go towards August. Now, sometimes, you know, if you look at 2002, it's a little bit flatter because obviously we had some volatility in the corn prices. I'd say that's going to be the situation this year with all the uncertainty. You're probably not going to have the big surge upward through the summer. It's going to be a more slow, gradual upward trend. But you can see what the seasonality suggests. And really, in this case, what you're trying to do is you think about it, we're all competing against each other when we're trying to buy cattle and put them on feed. But if you can buy them and $2 cheaper than your neighbor, you've already got an advantage. And $2 per hundredweight, when we start thinking about it on a fed animal, you know, basically $20-$22 a head, we know what that means in terms of our return on investment. That's a lot of money, a lot of return. So this is another way to try to be able to incorporate, you know, the seasonality when you're trying to buy your cattle. Now, from a guy that's running stocker cattle, summer grass cattle, for example, a lot of people have built their programs nowadays where they're buying a lot of these calves in the fall during the lows, like Dwayne pointed out, and just carrying them through the winter, roughing them back, and then taking them to summer grass. Well, the market, and looking at it on the averages, gives you an opportunity to try to protect yourself for that first half, you know, first 4, 5, 6 months of the year. Kind of hedge them up there in January or buy some puts. Market seasonally trends lower, you know, it's going to work. You know, basically 8 out of 10 years, turns lower in the spring time frame. Once you get through that situation in terms of the corn volatility that Dwayne pointed out, we've got the corn in the ground, you know, the corn market starts to kind of settle down as you go into the summer. At that point, people will look to lift their positions, or maybe if they're hedged, roll them into put options, and then let the season of the market go higher as you go in towards August time frame. So that's how you can incorporate it from, you know, a stocker man, stocker operation, is looking at it that way. Just going to look at a couple of these charts here in terms of kind of the big picture situation from a technical standpoint. And this is what we're doing, is just looking at, this is the weekly live continuations chart. And this is just a technical evaluator that we look at it, some stochastics. But what it does is it starts to kind of, again, tell you when the market is overbought or oversold. And what we mean by that is when the psychology is such where everybody is just so stinking bullish they can't see straight, or so stinking bearish that they can't see straight. But what it does, again, it kind of gives you a perspective of where the trends are going to go with the market. And this is looking at futures, but you can do the same thing from the cash standpoint as well. But, you know, you go back into here, you know, you look at 2003, you know, obviously you go back into the winter and spring of 2003, market was pretty overbought. You know, we had some sort of corrections. We went in there towards basically the 4th of July. And then from that point forward, the market went straight up. Again, we got into this time frame here in the middle of October. The market technically was extremely overbought. At that point, we knew that we'd have some sort of a correction to the market. How much? It's no one ever knows, but that's where you can start to incorporate this, is looking at some of these technical oscillators to try to help you understand if the market's overbought or oversold. And you can apply those back to number three on the decision tree, which is the futures or technical trend. So you start to incorporate the seasonality of the futures trend. You incorporate some of the technical indicators of the trend as well. And that will help you start to be able to analyze if you want to be putting some positions on based on the decision tree. Obviously, as we talked about, the decision tree profit overrides everything else. And that's the main objective that you want to be able to meet. So always want to keep that in mind. Here's another one. This is looking at the weekly feeder cattle. And we have what we call an 18-week moving average. That's that brown line in here. And went through that 18-week moving average, as you can see in here, whenever you go through that line, and this is an 18-week, if you were to look at a 36-week, it's even better. It's usually an indication of a trend change. And that's what you're trying to evaluate, is now what's the trend of the market? And obviously, once we went through there, you can see what was the trend. It was a little bit choppy. And then obviously with what's happened here since December 23rd, the trends turn lower. Something to keep in mind, though, when you look at this, it appears when you look at this technical indicator, you go back and you look at where the market's got to. This is looking at January feeder cattle, and it got all the way down there just underneath $80. That's probably going to be pretty good support for us as we look in here during the first half of the year in terms of lows for feeder cattle. And this is the weekly chart, so once the January goes off and you have the March coming on, probably right around this $80 plus or minus is going to be some good support for us, unless corn gets pretty crazy this spring. So as you start to see, as you start to incorporate this in your plan, if you see those spring feeders or even the fall feeder cattle get down here towards 80 cents, it may make sense to go ahead and start to try to protect yourself against your next round of inventory that you're trying to buy. We're probably right there. We've put some retained ownership stuff in there. If you have any questions on that, come up to us afterwards. But lunch starts in about 4 or 5 minutes. So didn't want to rush through this. But if you guys have any questions, Dwayne and I will be around to answer them.
Come by the booth.
Come by the booth, yep. Yeah.